Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 865. This is Kevin DeFranco. On the other end is Chris Calamito. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Well, we had a little pre-podcast chatter about the smoke outside. I'm just going to say it's fucking smoky outside, kids.
Yes, it is.
So if you're in one of those areas that is affected, like the both of us, yeah, I guess mostly stay indoors. It's not going to completely solve the problem, but it's probably going to help. Every time I go outside, I feel pretty shitty, so I suggest don't go outside right now. Go down to your basement and record a podcast. That's one way to get away from it.
Oh, no, let's not tell people to start podcasts. Come on now.
Oh man. Well, yeah. If you're in it for the money and the glory, that's the wrong place to be. That's for sure. But anywho, the both of us actually got Forbidden Door this week. Almost last week at this point.
Yeah.
But hey, it has not been covered on the podcast in the least. It was a pay-per-view. And, you know, anytime we get them, I will admit, like, last year, I know that I skipped Forbidden Door. Like, there was not a whole lot of interest to me last year.
I have skipped every AEW pay-per-view since Revolution 2022. And so you can see where my interest in AEW has fallen. But yes, I was drawn into Forbidden Door by the promise of Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada. Like most other people who weren't.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a drawing point. And certainly one of the ones that kind of Jeremy and I talked about before the pay-per-view. In and of the fact that, what was it? We counted how many matches they made just the week of the pay-per-view. And it was like six of them or something like that.
Putting the show together was a little of a mad dash to the finish. And then one match doesn't end up happening at all. But you know what? That was for the best. I feel sorry for Filthy Tom, but... No one needed that. No one needed that match.
No.
Unless that's the reason Omega and Ospreay went 40 minutes instead of 25.
Oh, my gosh.
I like that match better than some people. And by some people, I mean our good friend Steve Williams. But man, yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah, it got a little wacky at some point there. I got a little bit tired of that match at some point. Like it really did feel really great for a while, and then yeah, extra time is not always. I feel like a lot of times when I talk about great matches, I always like I feel like you need to get to like maybe the 15-minute mark or something like that.
Yeah, that's very fair.
So, and I mean, I know that there have been some other matches that are definitely high quality or probably shorter than that. But yeah, like if that list is pretty short, and like all-time memorables need to, yeah, to me go at least 15, and yeah. This one, went a little went extra 15, and it did not do itself any favors.
Once again, I was sucks. I should have hated the last 10-15 minutes of that match.
Yeah,
but I didn't. I was with it, you know, most of the way through. Maybe I kind of fell in and out throughout the match, and they got me back by the finish.
Oh,
so maybe that helped a little bit.
Right,
but. By the time Danielson versus Okada got in the ring, and I know that match had its issues with Danielson getting hurt about halfway in or so, But I feel like at some point I'm going to have to go back and watch that match unto itself and really properly view it. Because I did not consider Danielson and Okada the classic that they were basically promising. It basically had to be in order to make this pay-per-view worth it.
Well, you know, that was something too that I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. Just doing the Forbidden Door podcast on Thursday, I'm like, I'll have the time to at least go back and I know I literally fell asleep during parts of this match. I know I saw the finish in one of my awake faces. So I knew the outcome, and I do feel like I stayed up for most of it. But man, yeah, these AEW pay-per-views, especially on Sunday nights.
I also got to stop tuning in for that damn pre-show with four match pre-show. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is Dallas WrestleMania worthy.
it is, but I'm one of those people who's got it in my head that if you're early turning on a stream, you get in before everyone else does, and the quality of your stream is better. And I have no idea if this is technologically true or not, but I feel like, you know, if you get in early, You have less issues or no issues, as opposed to if I just turned in like at like 5 to 8 or 5 to 7 in my time zone. That helped too. The central time zone did help. Did help too.
Yes. I would imagine moving time zones would help me out quite a bit. but such is not the case.
it was a long show. It was a long night. I don't know if I exactly reviewed Okada and Danielson. I'm a star match guy anyway, or anyone cares what I think at the end of the day. but I would have liked to give it more of a chance.
That was the main point of my story too. Like, I thought that I'd have the time to view it again before this recording, and unfortunately it did not end up happening.
And I mean I guess it's got to be said, Danielson has basically only had two big matches this year, and he got hurt for both of them. That's a little rough.
Yeah, I mean, that's not good news for Mr. Danielson.
Yeah, the Iron Man match, you know, banged him up with an unspecified injury or series of injuries, and he was barely involved in anything, including the Anarchy in the Ring match at Double or Nothing, where he really didn't, you know, he was kind of just throwing weapons around and not really bumping. And then didn't wrestle again after that. And now he's injured his forearm, and it's allegedly worse than originally thought. So hit the it's going to be a
yeah. Total was that finish. Actually a Brie Bella Instagram
yeah.
post?
Yeah, Brie's Instagram post. I don't know if I should be mad or proud. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one anymore. It's going to be a photo finish for him to get back in time for Wembley. And he's got other people on that roster who are, you know, prone to injury, and some, you know, you got guys like Danielson, guys like Punk, who have a lot of wear and tear on them. And Danielson, they both took their time away for years away, but, you know, some of those injuries just don't. Never really heal, and then you pick back up where you left off.
I'm just gonna say they, while they're not quite as old as I am, they are not that much younger, quite frankly. And I know they do a better job of keeping their body in shape, but your body just kind of generally tolerates a little bit less of that kind of wear and tear as things go along. Like, that's just...
Speaking of that, how about Sting?
Oh. Okay.
Sunday he was out of it. Sunday he was not doing well. And then on Wednesday felt like he had to make up for that.
I was texting Jeremy since I knew he was not recording the AEW podcast this week, and he had watched AEW on time, so I guess I knew to expect something in the main event. And boy, did that moment really deliver in the worst way possible.
Oh, Sting. Oh my God. Doing a splash off a ladder through a table to the floor.
And like, they intentionally set those tables up like way out there.
Yeah, like. Steph should not have done that, no. But Sting overall did look better than he did on Sunday, and you know, it was the nice moment of him tapping Jericho, and so... But they're going to keep going.
He's
trying to do these tag matches. He's going to keep trying to do these tag matches, and it's just going like... If they're going to keep doing these tag matches... Why not have a singles match with MJF at some point? Why not?
Oh, yeah, like, I mean, it's rough watching Sting in there, just in general. Like, it's one of those ones where, and going back to Forbidden Door, and even before that, Jeremy had alerted me to how poorly Tanahashi is moving these days.
Oh, yeah. That did not start the Forbidden Door off on fire. That match did not do that.
Wow, man. That, you know, again, just... your body at some point does not want to put up with it, no matter what you do for yourself. And
right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I didn't see the swerve match, so... But of course, yes, I saw the MJF match, and it's just, this is not what people are paying. Essentially, this is not what people are paying for. You know, when you do this show. I mean, last year's show, I think, was, you know, when neither of us ordered it, was maybe didn't look the greatest on paper, but it absolutely blew everybody away in practice. This year's lineup may have been closer to it looked better on paper, and it was a little disappointing in
reality. That was one thing where I'm kind of scrolling through Twitter after the event or the next day, and I'm seeing people talking about it being the best pay-per-view of the year, and I'm like, huh? I don't even know how you come close to that conclusion.
No, it was a two-match show, really. And your opinion of those two matches is going. The opinions on those two matches are wildly divergent. It is very, very subjective.
Well, and as much as I was kind of giving you a little bit of a hard time about the Ospreay and Omega match, like, I guess I do feel pretty close to you in and of the fact that even though some of that stuff was completely ridiculous, for the most part, the match held my entertainment.
Yes, it definitely did. So, yeah.
You know, could it have used 15 less minutes? Sure. Yep. You know, a little editing here and there probably could have helped. Like, but
oh God, it was like a part of the Skrull from Chicago. So it literally somehow went 15 minutes too. That one went somehow went an unplanned 15 minutes too long. I still don't know how you pull that off.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that is kind of hard to pull off. You know, like, if you go over by a couple of minutes, you're like, oh, okay. But when you start getting into, to me, like, the 10-minute territory, like, something's got to be going, man, I've been in this match a lot longer than I expected to be. Like, everyone involved, you know what I mean? Like, did the referee forget to give us the go-home signal? Like, am I missing something here? Like, it just seems like that should be some wrestler's instinct that kicks in.
Right.
But clearly did not that time. I'm trying to think. Oh. Yeah, and I guess you kind of said it about Okada and Danielson. I am assuming that wrestling with a broken forearm, especially should that x-ray be 100% accurate. Yeah, like that's going to impact the match, you know what I mean?
It definitely is, and you know, there were some choices made, like most notably the convulsions. I really hope he told Bree he was going to do that before he did.
Yes, I hope he let his family in on that one at a minimum, because that would have been like, I guess I knew that it was a gag the whole time. Like, I didn't feel like I was concerned.
But that I know it was maybe it was a combination of people being tired, but there was an uncomfortable silence during that period.
Oh, yeah, enough people bought into it that the pay-per-view was not Forbidden Door was just it was okay. Like you said, like it, even though kind of the matchups were rushed, it seemed like they could be enjoyable. But I mean, it feels like at least half of New Japan's roster is in that category that we're already talking about, where they're getting, I don't know if they're necessarily getting injured, but they're definitely looking their age.
Oh yeah, no. New Japan has done a terrible job turning over their roster in the last 5 years. I mean, there was the COVID period where they were shut down, and then they came back, and you know, they just kept running Okada and Jay White over and over again, and other matches over and over again, and now Sonata's the champion. going forth from the top, and from what I can gather over what I read about what's going on in Japan, not over at all, because he just spent too long being a secondary guy, and he can't just all of a sudden one day turn that light switch on.
They fumbled the ball on him. I felt like the last time I watched, you know, was still watching on a regular basis, I'm just like, it got to that point where the WWE was with Roman Reigns is the only comparable one that I can think of, where it's just like, you know, what was it, two or three straight WrestleManias you have him lose the big match?
I don't know about Sonata. That's definitely Naito.
Oh my gosh. Naito, well,
is definitely Roman Reigns. Yes. Harrison is there, yes. Sonata just was in a tag team for a long time, and then it was somewhat secondary, because here's the thing, and this was also a thing when Evil became champion and like a couple years back as well.
Yeah.
And Sonata and Evil, of course, are just, you know, eternally linked, because, you know, they were in a tag team for so many years. And it's just, whenever New Japan had to have one of their B-shows where Okada defended the title, I swear he beat Okada. He beat Evil and Sonata like 4 or 5 times each.
Oh.
On the B show, so you're just feeding somebody to Okada or Tanahashi or Jay White or whoever's really the main event, or Naito, whoever's really the main event. And they were sacrificed many, many times in those type of matches, or for Intercontinental title matches. And then especially the way historically things are in New Japan, you just can't do that. And then Sonata shows up, the Forbidden Door, has a dull match with the now former Jungle Boy. And then we get... Should we keep his cap talking about Forbidden Door, or should we wait and talk about the promo when we get to Dynamite?
I'm trying to think of which promo you're talking about, because one popped
the Jack Perry promo.
Oh, jeez. Well, I guess it's worth a. I guess I wasn't surprised that he lost to Sonata.
Well, no, he was never going to win that match.
B, I do feel like it was coming at some point. Like, everyone kept on expecting the Jack Perry turn. But there have been so many weird things in it. To me, one of the weird things did start at Forbidden Door, where Taz has had this stance where he's kind of standoffish about his son. Like, they've acknowledged that he's his father, but he doesn't really root for him per se, and doesn't really kind of react to what he's kind of doing. And I've just found it really strange when Taz walked off because Jungle Boy screwed up. And I guess that really kind of piqued my interest for all the wrong reasons.
It was a clothesline.
Oh, what did I say? Oh, yeah.
No, I mean, it was a clothesline. His son took a clothesline.
Yeah.
There was nothing more brutal than that.
And I think that was the other thing. Like, the action to the reaction did not seem commensurate. You know, like, because it was just a clothesline, I'm like, hold on, why are you freaking out about this? Like, if he would have been stomping his head in on the, you know, platform or ramp, wherever they were at the time, I could see that happening. But, two of the four pillars, wow, did they have terrible Dynamites?
Yeah.
You know, because Jack Perry is the first. Since we're talking about him, we can finish about him. But, oh my gosh, like, when he did the Canadian wildfire joke and it just was met with silence, I'm like, oh boy, like, that was a bomb-a-rooney, and, like, I felt uncomfortable for him at that point.
Yeah, no, he's not a good promo. He does not have, and it's what affected it's what affected his run. He does not have a fourth gear at the very least. He is just, he lacks intensity.
No.
And he can't build up to it. I mean, you know, Christian was like, it was pulling teeth trying to get some intensity and some passion and emotion out of Jungle Boy, their entire feud. And there were moments he maybe came close, but never quite reached it. You know, and that's having to bring up all that emotions about his dad, you know, putting himself in the place where someone's saying horrible things about his dad, and it was still a struggle for him to go there emotionally. I'm glad he's not trying to be a real actor. Because he would really fail at that.
It definitely would not probably go well for him. It's a good thing that he's good at the athletic thing, in the ring thing.
He can be, but once again, he just has that inability to just really, you know, sink his teeth into things. He's never going to be a good promo, and and the whole thing with the pillars and MJF, you know, chewing him up and spitting him out every week on the microphone didn't help. He was dead in the water as a babyface.
Well, and that is the one thing I'm kind of wondering is if he can maybe find that edge as a heel. Obviously, by my own description, it was not a good start.
No, not a good start at all. Once again, he's got to find it. He's got to find his inner cockiness. He's got because I think it's there. I think he's in real life a kind of a smug, aloof guy.
The aloof thing is a good description for, like, I thought it was really awkward that he said that he was dating the hottest bitch in the company.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like...
They need to pull Anna Jay from JAS to put them together on screen, yes.
I was just like, huh, well, that's interesting. I was surprised by the wording in this day and age. It feels like that's something that shouldn't be said. But
she called herself and she said she's a bitch. She said she has a fat ass, so it's okay.
Yeah,
but no, I think putting those two, he has to really play into the part of his personality that it's a big part of his personality.
No,
he has grown up in affluency. He's had everything handed to him his whole life. He is, you know, a...
Oh.
Yeah.
Feed into the character that everyone wants him to be in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Or has accused him of being.
Yes. You know, pull Anna Jay out of the JAS because she's useless there.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Put them together on screen. Maybe for a little while at least, let her spend more time at ringside with him than wrestling herself.
She doesn't wrestle that much anyway, so.
Right. Yes. Yeah, and then just let him just play, you know, show that smugness and just really, really play that up. This can work, but again, it just doesn't ever feel like he is ready to commit to anything he's doing.
Oh. Yeah, so that's like I said, I guess I'm at least interested to see what happens here. Bomberoonie on day one, but that switch doesn't always happen. And it, I guess, the one reason I have confidence in it is there are so many times where it's just like, oh, so and so couldn't find their footing as a babyface, and then all of a sudden you turn them heel, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it now. And, like, they seem to turn some corner. And, it'll be interesting to see what ends up transpiring there. The other pillar that did not have a good night, Samuel Guevara. Holy smokes. He got to stand there beside Chris Jericho and say absolutely nothing for the entire length of a promo.
I know that's kind of the point, because, you know, Jericho's trying to keep him under his thumb when he's been trying to break out. But once again, like with every AEW breakup, they're dragging it out too long. they're making the guy look like too much of a patsy. And Sammy Guevara is a terrible babyface. We've tried this before. He can't. He talk about someone who is just naturally smug. The most punchable face in all of wrestling.
Yeah, and they insist on making him a babyface for some reason or another.
Yeah, no. This is the second time we're gonna be doing this, and it's not gonna work. And there's a ceiling at him as a heel too, because there's just something about him that you legitimately don't like. And not in a way you want to see him get beat up, and certainly you don't want to see him win anything. It's, you don't like this person, and he's not good enough in any way to justify all the chances he's got. He can do some cool stuff, but he has no psychology and it doesn't make sense. He can't sell. He just has no logic to anything he does. There's no self-awareness in that regard. And it shines through in everything he does. Just, you know, there's a ceiling to him, and I don't know how many people would miss him if he was gone.
Oh. Yeah, it would not be entirely surprising if he moved along to different pastures.
He's Jericho's boy, and Tony Khan seems to really love him. He is definitely a Tony Khan boy, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where I understand that point, but as the wrestler himself, you've just got to go, I have not really gotten the push that I want. You know, like, even if it... Even if maybe the push wasn't deserved, if you do have that kind of self-confidence and cockiness and, you know, everything that they always talk about with the whole wrestling, you know, if you're not in the main event, you're not really in it for wrestling or whatever shenanigans goes on.
Darby's a little more protected because he's Darby, he does all this crazy shit, and he's got Sting by his side. But this whole Pillars nonsense has just killed, and really, it's killed them from the start. Jungle Boy and Sammy Guevara, because there's no way that they could ever have deserved that the thrust it upon them. MJF really doesn't either, but he's MJF. He's already the champion. As much as I think he goes, oh my god, let's talk about that now. Can they coexist in an entire tournament of it? Before we get to MJF and M-Cole,
okay,
throw this at you. Swerve and Keith Lee broke up probably at least 9 months ago now, I believe, somewhere in there. They've never had a true one-on-one match against each other, and now because of this stupid blind draw tournament bullshit, they have to team up again.
When I saw that, that was one of the moments where I just fired off a text to Jeremy. And I'm just like, I didn't even say that many months ago. I said 3 months ago, these two broke up. And
It may be nine. I don't even know.
Yeah.
They were basically breaking up the whole time they were teaming.
Yeah.
The whole time.
I feel like it was maybe actually somewhere in between because Keith Lee had that mystery time off, and I'm probably discounting how much time that was.
And Swerve had some time away too, I think. Swerve and the Embassy. Oh my god, what a collection of losers the Embassy is. Why are you putting more? Oh. Definitely one of the guys who was the grass was not greener for him. I know he was let go from WWE, so he had to go somewhere. But
oh, jeez,
that's been like 2 years ago now that he's been in AEW and accomplished nothing. Although the tag team champion,
that's
so that weird period of the tag team division, and I don't necessarily know if they were that over as a team. You know, that's when the Acclaim got way over on them, and
yeah, oh, right.
And they even screw up with them too.
Oh my gosh, they keep on screwing the pooch on all their tag teams. Like it is impressive how many times they find to screw up their own tag teams.
And I guess now it's time to talk about the latest AEW tag team, MJF and Adam Cole. Can they coexist?
Well, and that's what made, honestly, when they had the segment earlier in the show, MJF and Cole, and it was later announced, the whole Swerve and Keith Lee thing, and I'm like, why do you have multiple I hate each other tag teams going on for this tournament?
What is the purpose of any of this? Why are we doing this? AEW has too many months between pay per views. It's time to start moving to, they get that Max deal finally, and they just run specials every 4 weeks or so. I mean, I could see ramping up to six.
If you do one every other month, you don't have that much time to monkey around.
Yeah. I mean, then again, it seems like they're going to be monkeying around heading into Wembley. if we're going to waste a lot of TV time on this stupid tournament.
Oh, well, yeah, and it's
other tournaments are going on at the same time.
And then that's what I was just going to say. Like, why are you doing this while the Owen Hart tournaments are going on currently? Because they do have a separate men's and women's for that. Although
they're going to rush through that so that it ends on the 15th in Calgary, my birthday. The big 4-0.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah. But the 15th in Calgary, they're going to do the two finals on Collision and drag out Martha Hart and all that. So, it's again, just fine, I guess, but...
It also explains, like, I kind of got a chuckle out of the fact that the women's tournament was realistically only 3 rounds. And that just... I always feel like you need 4 rounds to feel like a true tournament.
Well, they're both only 3 rounds.
Okay. I guess I wasn't paying as much attention to the men's bracket.
Because the three other men's quarterfinal/first round are all going to be airing this Saturday on Collision.
Okay, well, you know. I'll at least tape Collision.
Yeah. Well, Collision's going to be taped anyway. I think they're doing it tomorrow night. Tonight, actually, I think is when they're recording it for air on Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I know I've got plans and I got a wedding in the afternoon. It's kind of an early wedding, so if I get home around 8, 9 o'clock, I'm going to throw money in the bank. I'm not going to throw on Collision.
that is fair enough. I guess I'm trying to think. We didn't really talk. I was almost ready to pivot to Money in the Bank, but the Cole and MJF, Adam Cole and MJF interactions did kind of... They made me laugh. I really got a hoot out of the average white guy comment to Roderick Strong from MJF.
Okay, so MJF is the one trying to play nice. That's interesting.
it is kind of interesting, and as long as he doesn't necessarily pull anything in this whole night out, which it doesn't seem like he's going to, but who knows? Because they left it open ended.
They never followed up with that.
I'm assuming that we're not going to end up with a dime situation with someone sleeping with the fishes. But. If they actually get along and have a good match during this tournament or a couple of good matches, it could make things a little more interesting along the way for the two of them.
It's a way to stretch this thing out. I guess they're gonna go to Wembley with it. But they're running the United Center a week later, and I imagine they'll go to the United Center with Punk challenging for the title.
Oh, my gosh.
Let's talk about that, yes.
They have so many AEW things to just be able to hop around to.
And I think I have at least one more after we get done talking.
Because I guess I did not realize that was the week after Wembley.
The week after Wembley, they're going to Chicago 3 times. They're staying in Chicago for three shows.
Yeah, that's what did strike me. I'm like, you guys were just in Chicago. Like,
it's tradition. Come on. That collision in between Dynamite, which is only in the smaller, now arena / former Sears Center anyway, and then that collision that's going to be in the United Center, that's going to have 5,000 people or less in it. I mean, there's just, and it's going to be that thing where that WWE thing where the night before a major show, no one who's actually on the pay-per-view can have a match. So it's going to be then again, Collision's the weird roster anyway. So we'll see how
that goes. There's a pay-per-view roster and a non-pay-per-view roster.
Except for a pay-per-view in the United States, Punk's got to be on it. And as I said, that's probably going to be heat just him winning the title. All in is Wembley, which they need. I know, just based on going over there for the first time, they're doing this giant crowd. But then you got to make good on that giant crowd. You got to give that. You can't give that giant crowd everything when you have to put another 15,000-20,000 people into the United Center in your most overused market a week later. So yeah, no, so you can't. It's great that they're going to put maybe 80,000 into Wembley, but you got to live in with a good show and a desire to come back again.
that's one where I still fall under the boy. I understand that the English want to support them, but ooh, man, the product right now, little on the rough side currently.
Yes, it is. And which somewhat leads me to my next point, which may be the final point of AEW. Who knows? We might talk about AEW another 20 minutes. Poor Renee just cannot be in the same company with Mox. Because now she's got to play this weird mom role between Mox and Eddie. And it just, she made her decision a long time ago when that stuff with Miz and Maryse was happening that, she wasn't going to get more physical involved. She wasn't going to be a character in storylines. But you just can't have the two of them in the same company without referencing it either.
Ugh. Yeah, and this was the first time that we have actually seen them truly interact on the show, I feel like.
Yeah. Which was weird, because they've done a good job of keeping them apart and not really having her interview him. There was allusions to it during the Punk the singles Hangman feud. I could have left that out too, really.
Yeah.
Because she's so good at what she does, and but again, as I said, she decided a long time ago she does not want to be a character. She doesn't want to get physically involved or anything like that. So it's just like, what's the point of this? You've got this really really great professional person doing your interviews. I love RJ City. I think he's funny, but he doesn't. He's not there to be your classy host / announcer person.
Yeah, he's there to be the comedy shtick. And that's fine.
I have no idea why they kept Marvez around so long. He's just like a dumb lummox, because I don't understand why he's still there. The other chick, what's her name? Lexi Nair or something.
Yeah, I believe so.
She's very bland and nondescript. You got Renee. You waited a long time to get her. Just let her do what she wants to do. I think the constant, everyone having to take that little shot about her marriage, is part of the reason that she grew just disenfranchised with WWE. Oh. And now we're doing it here.
But she said okay to it now, so it's okay.
I guess
I don't know if she has, but I mean, I'm kind of in a. I didn't really know that she kind of intentionally kept things, or that was she was mad about everything that happened in the WWE.
I'm projecting. I didn't. I don't think she ever really said that. It felt to me that like, oh really? Do we really have to do this? You know, especially when she's on commentary and Graves would needle her, and then you know when she's interviewing and other people would have to mention it. She's always ends up having to interview his whoever he's feuding.
Yeah,
with.
His opponents.
It just becomes this really awkward situation. It just
well, and I even feel like they've done a pretty decent job of that. Where you're talking the opponent situation, where I don't even feel like she's interviewed Moxley's opponents that much in AEW. Like it has happened, but they've. I feel like generally kept her away from those interviews.
Yeah, you got 200 interviews. You got two other full time interviewers plus Shivani's running around with a microphone phone too.
Oh my gosh! Like, holy smokes, Tony Schiavone, just too many interviews. Too many interviews himself. Good gravy. Yeah, for being the guy in the booth, like just completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
Holy shit! What would the hold on? How do we get to the announcing?
From Renee.
Oh, from Renee. Yeah. Yeah. It was well. It was just a weird situation. Like she kind of made it sound like she had known Eddie for a while, but. I don't feel like, you know, that's one of those things that I don't feel like has been talked about on camera at all. It was also kind of a weird time for her to butt in, like, of all times, too. Like, he's doing all this other stuff. He's beating up other... He's beating down the Young Bucks, and she's just okay with it, I guess. But she draws the line at him and Eddie Kingston having a beef.
Yeah, it makes it once again, and when she's in the company with him when he's a heel, it makes it even more awkward. Yes, he's doing all these ugly things, and yeah, and then of course, yeah, we're gonna have Blood and Guts on the 19th in Boston. At this moment, I guess it's got to be 4-on-4 because Danielson's gonna be out. And well, then, or maybe they got to find a. Obviously, Takeshita is going to be the fifth. The fourth was going to be the fifth. But now, because it still makes sense for Eddie to be in the match, along with the four elite guys.
Oh right.
So I guess they got to pick up a fifth.
Oh boy, I suppose that's going to be interesting who they end up picking up as the fifth.
Yeah, but they made the challenge though, so unless Kenny's gonna bow out.
Well,
he wasn't on the show at all.
Yeah, that was the one thing I was kind of thinking. I'm like, oh well, yeah, Omega's gonna. Like, I was thinking Omega's going to be their fifth. That's how they'll even things up. And I kind of forgot that one of them will not be available for the Blackpool Combat Club also.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Unless John Callis is going
to... Oh, jeez. None of us need that to happen.
John Callis has taken three bumps since 1997. Yeah, he still somehow makes money in the business. Good for him.
Yeah, I was going to say, God bless. He doesn't feel like he needs to be Sting and diving from ladders in his 60s. You're a smart man, Don Callis. Get paid without taking bumps. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so I think that about does it for AEW talk, unless there's anything else that you think we've forgotten. Oh, you know the one thing that I kind of forgot about? My good buddy and OPA partner in crime, Ken, informed me that one Christopher Jericho now also has a Kiss tribute band that is playing here in Columbus tomorrow evening. And yeah, evidently they are a touring act.
I had no idea that Jericho had that going for himself.
Yeah, that man really loves to not be at home, I guess. If he's doing concert gigs after the wrestling gigs, that man does not like to be in the house. So, yeah, that is the last thing worth mentioning. I am not a big Kiss fan.
I had no idea this existed. He's been trying to get this off the ground since 2020?
Yes. Yeah, they're playing like a venue that's at least a decent size here in Columbus. I want to say that it's low thousands, like maybe 3,000 or something like that.
And yes, he does go do the full makeup.
Yeah, I would not expect anything less. That man does love some hair metal.
He does love his hair metal. Then again, so apparently so do I now. Second time in 2 months I went to see this full on 80s hair metal glam. They literally call it the glam band. They get all dressed up. They're really good covers. They're really good. They play fairs, festivals, and bars around and all pretty much all over Wisconsin at this point. They got a great following, and it's a fun show.
That was something that we did not talk about, and maybe you will have a different take than Shahid. What was your take on the final countdown being used by one Mr. Bryan Danielson?
Cool moment, but my God, if Tony Khan really spent $250,000 for one song for one night. He better never cry poor when it comes to anyone's contract negotiations ever again.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of a weird quote to put out there. I'm like, you know, you're kind of backing yourself into a corner with that one, right, pal? Like, that you can just burn that money? Because, yeah, seems like a high number to use. What I would deem, though I enjoy the song, it is not, to me, it's not a hair metal classic.
It can be, but once again, you're playing to how many people were buying ROH DVDs in 2004 to 2006.
Not me, so I did not get the reference at all. I just thought that he decided to use the final countdown.
Well, there you go.
You know, doing a podcast about wrestling for 15 years, and during that time period, I was unawares of the fact that he was using that song in ROH.
Yeah.
So
that was the thing that when they were so underground, they could get away with it.
Yeah, I always did enjoy the ECW's, like, hey, this is how we'll get around copyright. We'll have someone cover the song, and we will use the cover song version.
Well, they never really did. They never did that in the arena. That one, they would only really. They got away with it for a lot longer than you would think.
Oh,
especially
yes.
Sandman.
Yes.
Because everyone knows how little I guess Metallica is.
Yes, they are pretty particular. So it was shocking that they did not go after. Maybe they're wrestling fans, and that's why they decided not to go after ECW. They just should have been chanting ECW in the arena sometime. Really would have helped, helped out Mr. Heyman and his finances a little bit. Tony Khan clearly does not need help with the finances since he's burning it on the Final Countdown. Okay. Somewhat of a, I suppose we can do a quick Money in the Bank preview. Shahid and I talked about it a little bit. But we did not go by this with a live, like a predictions kind of show. So I think that's what we could go through here. I pulled up the wiki here, and let's. I'm going to go in reverse order. They always seem to put the least interesting matches as the highest numbers. Gunther versus Matt Riddle. What are you thinking on this one, Christopher?
This should be a fun match, but Gunther's winning.
Yes, that is exactly the way that I feel. If Gunther happens to lose, I know that he is moving in. He is going to be Seth Rollins' next challenger. Should that happen? Not expecting that to happen, but
No. I'm crossing my fingers right now for Gunther versus Cody in Pittsburgh. That'd be the match.
Fair enough. Second up on the list here on the Yeel Wiki, Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler taking on former champions who never lost the belts. One Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. Gotta admit, I suppose I did not expect Liv Morgan back this quickly.
No, I did not. I mean, she was gone. She was gone so little that they really didn't have to strip them of the belts and run a term. And they didn't run the term. Just won a simple four way. Yes, she was not gone. She was not gone long enough. No.
Yeah, that part became kind of awkward. I'm like, hold on, what? Because, like you said, like I that was the immediate thought in my head. I'm like, hold on, why'd they get stripped again? Then I fully expect Ronda and Shayna to win this matchup.
I do expect him to win it, but I'm not entirely convinced that they will. There's a possibility that they will lose it because once they've always been hot, you know, they love having giving Liv Morgan things to do and featuring her, and Raquel, as of a week ago Monday, was being primed for a feud with Rhea Ripley. And then they just immediately changed course. I don't know if, you know, Liv Morgan's, status changed that quickly, or if, you know, Vince made one of his wanted changes.
Oh, yeah, I don't feel like there's been a whole lot of information out there one way or the other.
Yeah, because once again, it's just very strange. Did not expect to see Liv Morgan back that quickly.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, they could win the belts back. But yeah, this is their make good. This is their trying to keep Ronda happy thing. So.
Oh, yeah. Especially since she's been out there saying, "Make women's tag team wrestling great."
Yeah.
It feels like you should keep the belts on those two, at least for the foreseeable future here, in my opinion. So, fare thee well, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. You will get another crack at things. I'm going to hop around the list a little bit because I do not want to get into the Bloodline Civil War next. That seems like it should be a little bit later on this card.
It's gonna close.
Yeah, so that's why I decided to hop around. I think this one has a little more predictable of an outcome, but by God, is there a lot of heat on this match? Cody Rhodes versus Dominic Mysterio.
Now, I don't think the match is a foregone conclusion in the way that you do. Because I think Brock Lesnar's showing up, and I think he's costing Cody this match, and Dominic Mysterio is going to, even if his unconscious body has to be put on top of Cody, he will be declared the winner of this match.
Yeah. It's either a decisive Cody win or that happens. Like, I don't see Judgment Day being the ones who cost Cody Rhodes.
No, they've got too much else going on. It'll pretty much only be Rhea and Dominic's corner.
Yeah. So, would you be ready for Rhea Ripley to be assaulted by one Brandi Rhodes during this match?
I think that that's exactly what he's saying. I cannot wait. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but that would be funny. There's no way it wouldn't pop me at all.
Oh man. Next up, since we kind of talked a little Judgment Day, we can group them together a little bit here. Seth freaking Rollins taking on what is sometimes called the leader of Judgment Day, one Finn Balor.
Should be a really good match. I mean, there's almost no way it won't be, unless somebody gets hurt, like 5 minutes into the match, like the first time these two wrestled.
Fully expect the buckle bomb spot early in this matchup too.
I could see it, and I could see Finn trying to do it on Seth.
Yes.
That would be an interesting thing spot to do. Once again, as I said, I think they'll have a really good match. I
mean, yes.
I have no expectation of a title change here. Seth is winning this thing. But depending on the layout of the show, I guess we'll see if he doesn't get at least attempted to be cashed in on.
Yes, that could make things pretty interesting. I guess speaking then of cashing in, let's move to the men's match here then, since we were talking about Seth freaking Rollins there. Ricochet, Shinsuke Nakamura, LA Knight, Santos Escobar, Butch, Damian Priest, and Logan Paul. Do you have any... Shahid and I did kind of talk a little bit about a rating system here. So I will lead off here and see if you agree and or disagree with the listing. For me, Logan Paul is number one. LA Knight, number two, Damian Priest, number three, and then it's the field after that.
No one else is winning this thing. No one else is primed or ready at all. I still have hesitation with LA Knight. I know there's some things going around that maybe Triple H isn't as high on giving it to Logan Paul as others maybe might be, and that, you know, it could be Logan, it could be LA Knight, or would rather be LA Knight or Priest. Priest, of course, has lost every week in the build-up to this show, so of course he'll win.
There is always a lot of reverse logic in the WWE. So yes, because he has had a losing streak, I would not be entirely surprised if he wins.
No, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins at all. Because again, he could be a good pick. Yeah. LA Knight, I am still hesitant with him. I just think there's still a lot of the irony crowd with him, you know, and the yeah and all that. And then when push comes to shove, do you really want him as world champion? As, you know, even the Seth secondary world title, do you really? And he's a SmackDown guy, so he would be kind of more teasing with Roman Reigns too.
I forgot about that part.
Once again, I still feel like LA Knight is gonna it's got that popularity where the there's the ceiling is the U.S. title, basically.
Yeah, you kind of wonder if he can. He's one of those guys that he knows enough about wrestling that he hides his weaknesses as not the most athletic person on the planet.
Yeah, no, there can be a place for that. Once again, he knows what he is. He is yes. That throwback to the late 90s, early 2000s kind of guy, and you know, catchphrases and all that. And so yeah, he can be entertaining. I think. I still think the whole bit with Logan Paul winning, because then you could just completely set his sights on Seth, and not, you know, not even tease that LA Knight is going to beat Roman Reigns.
Well, and Damian Priest kind of is in the same boat where those two were on Raw, and it almost makes more sense to have someone looming over Seth more than Roman Reigns.
Yeah, you could. I mean, I guess you could have Roman Reigns just laid out by the Usos, super kicks galore, and then. But yeah, it's just a month before SummerSlam. You don't want to do that. You don't want to have Roman Reigns lose the title at Money in the Bank out of cash in.
Yeah, that is one of those options that I do not see on the table for this pay per view.
No. So once again, so almost for that reason alone, I think it would be more for the Raw guy.
Oh.
But of course, we've had so many same night cash-ins over the years, especially in the recent history, or people barely waiting a month, and it's just.
Oh.
Any one of these people could win. Not Logan Paul. I think Logan Paul would be a very quick turnaround, just with his schedule and his contract. I guess you could have LA Knight walk around with a briefcase for a while. He's still not technically a babyface yet, even though he's cheered everywhere he goes.
Well, I do think that there wouldn't necessarily be a quick turnaround with Logan Paul, just for the same reasons. Actually, you said because of his schedule, like he can sit on that briefcase and just show up whenever. Like,
oh my god! If he were to actually just carry that briefcase around to every media appearance and everything he does, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be a pretty funny gag for him to have just for himself, honestly.
Yeah, I think that once again he's still my pick to win. I think it makes the most sense because poor Priest. Once again, they've done the reverse logic thing with him.
Oh,
and. It never works when they do that. Really, it really doesn't. And then once again, I said LA Knight. I feel like there's a level of irony to his reactions, and that once he actually ascends to the top spot, then it's when people are gonna go, whoa, 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 whoa. It's too far, too much, too much.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he ever really gets to that stage. That's one thing I hadn't thought about that much, and that will be kind of the... just a lot of people have been winning again with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
Yeah.
You know, they've been using it as one of those crowning moments again recently after having a few people fail earlier on with the briefcases, so it.
Although last year was the embarrassment with Austin Theory. The U.S. title and lost.
Yeah.
And then still won it. Then still won it back a month. Then still won it like a month later.
what a weird ride that guy has had.
And he's been missing for weeks now.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking to myself. I'm like, hold on, he's not anywhere near this card. What the fuck?
No, he had a match with Sheamus, a 6-man tag with Pretty Deadly against the Brawling Brutes. He was not on what the heck was the last paper you called? Night of Champions.
Oh.
In Saudi. He's not going to England as far as I know. So, yes, maybe something going on with him, injury-wise or otherwise.
Yeah, that is quite a possibility. Okay, seems like we're both going with Logan Paul as our number one with the other two there for the men. Let's turn our eyes on the women's match here. Zelina Vega, Becky Lynch, Zoe Stark, Bayley, Io Sky, and Trish Stratus. Shahid and I did not talk about this one very much. Do you have a ranking for these ladies and their probabilities here?
Io 1.
Yeah. It is wild that...
I think Io makes the most sense. I think Bayley's had it before. In all the in the recent changes in the women's division that brought Liv Morgan back and sent Raquel back to tag team action, we got a tease for Becky and Rhea Ripley. So that's coming soon, whether Becky wins this briefcase or not.
Yes.
Would not surprise me if they pull it quick. They get Becky out of the Trish Stratus feud quickly so they can make that match for SummerSlam.
Those three have definitely interacted a little bit less in the past 2 weeks.
Yeah, there's definitely been a change, and it's for the best. I mean, I don't care whose idea it was. It's for the best.
yeah, that was not running smoothly, and I don't think there was any good way out of that. Quite frankly.
And Rhea's. You know, Raquel was going to be the SummerSlam opponent. Just that wasn't going to work. So,
it would just be more of the same that they were talking about with that Becky Lynch was giving her kind of a hard time about that she hasn't faced anyone serious. It just would have been another unserious opponent.
So Becky and Rhea's coming soon, regardless.
Yeah.
And Becky, even though she's never won it before, and she's trying to make a big deal out of how that it would be a big deal for her to win it, it's like the one thing left. She doesn't really need it for obvious reasons.
And I mean that's kind of the interesting thing is that she's probably the number two to me. Like,
she would be the number two.
Io is to me the definite number one and. I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit last week. Zelina Vega does not seem in a position to be getting the briefcase. I guess that to me a close comparison with her winning it would be more of when Carmella won it. Like, you almost have to build her after winning the briefcase. You know?
Yeah. There's something to that, so yeah, I don't think.
I don't think that's terribly likely. Zoe Stark seems too early in her run to be getting a briefcase.
Yeah, too early, and I'm just never gonna get behind this bush, so I don't want to see it. Trish might even be interesting because she can stay in big Becky Lynch's orbit while Becky is feuding with Rhea Ripley and going into a title match.
Oh.
If she had the briefcase,
yeah,
that might be a way to play it. But once again, it's just staging Trish's life. At this stage in Trish's life, she really doesn't need to be in a ladder match at nearly 50 years old. So, even no matter how great a shape she's in,
oh yeah. Well, I don't think she's going to try to pull anything as silly as Sting did. So,
well, I don't know.
I suppose we'll find out on Saturday here.
And we don't have anyone else left, do we? Bayley stealing it from Io to have it again. You know, the last time she was still a baby face, and she did the same night cash in, so she could be really annoying with that briefcase as a heel.
Oh.
You know, dragging it out.
It's kind of funny that she almost needs help at this point. Like, she's one of the pillars, but she's also had just so many losses at this juncture that I mean, I get it. If you want to kind of help elevate some people, you got to take someone's got to take some L's. But yeah, you've got to come out of that funk, and she hasn't come out of that funk yet. So it's going to be really, yeah. If she wins if she's the one to win the briefcase, like she's almost got to come out of that EO feud on the better side, and that would be a little strange too. Like,
yeah,
feels like giving up on EO before she even gets started, which would be a shame. So yeah, we're agreeance on both of them. EO Sky for the women, probably for the most part. Although Becky and then Bailey are. And then, well, Trish, actually. So, really, Zoe and Zelina are the only ones that were kind of throwing them in the field there for the lowest chances. What will be the main event here? The Bloodline Civil War, the Bloodline versus the Usos, Roman Reigns, Solo Sikoa versus Jimmy and Jay. How do you see this one playing out?
This is a tough one. I mean, this, once again, you've already done a tag match with Roman Reigns and Solo where Solo took the pin. It's not a big deal to pin Solo to win a match. No. But the Usos are supposed to be the greatest tag team of this generation, so they shouldn't be losing to two guys who only teamed one other time.
Yes, I agree.
And you've got to set up something for SummerSlam with the title at stake.
Yeah, and so I believe we've talked about this.
Yes, we were talking about this. Jay should pin Roman.
Opinion has not changed.
Yeah, no.
Fair enough. I'm with you. It would be the most intriguing thing and the easiest way to get from point A to point B. I think that's definitely a show trope. Sometimes being predictable is not bad.
Right. It's insane how over the storyline has gotten, how over the Usos have gotten. Because conventional wisdom would tell you that you should have something bigger in line for Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, but all your metrics are telling you that your audience is really invested in this feud and they want to see it continue. Now, once again, do I think either Jimmy or Jay are ever going to become champion? No. But we're pretty much decided that Roman's holding on this thing at least until another WrestleMania. So.
Yeah, gonna have some feuds in between, and definitely gonna have some interesting feuds in between.
Yeah. So yeah, and Roman's streak of never being pinned since something like December of 2019 is not as important as, you know, obviously him keeping the title. So I think you can sacrifice him having not been pinned in a match in 3.5 years for this. I think it's worth it.
You have
to go big in order to convince you that either of the Usos is a title contender in a building of that. Because once again, when Jay was challenging before, there was nobody in the building. now you're going to Ford Field. And now, you know, everything's fully back. And The story is over. The Usos are over, but they still want. We're just assuming it's Jay, but if Jay is getting that singles match against Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, he needs to go into it red hot. And there's no better way to have him or anyone else go into a title match red hot after than pinning Roman Reigns.
Yep, for the first time in whatever that time period is that I already forget.
Yeah.
A long ass time. Oh man. So I guess that wraps up the Money in the Bank preview. the full Money in the Bank preview. Anything else to cover in the world of wrestling before we mosey on out of here?
No, I think we're good.
Bell Time Beer was one of the beers that I sent to that Jeremy Mays may have acquired by certain means. Hoofhearted Brewing, Party at Steve Gutenberg's House, Double IPA. It has Steve Gutenberg in Police Academy attire on it without pants. It is a the artwork for Hoofhearted Brewing, if should you be able to find it, is pretty fantastic. It has this great kind of old school cartoon vibe to it. And yeah, this beer, Double IPA, hop with Simcoe and Mosaic hops, 8.4% alcohol. I do not see an IBU on here, but plenty tasty, nonetheless. Hoofhearted.
Oh, you said Hoofhearted, not Hoofhearted. Okay.
Yeah, H-O-O-F space H-E-A-R-T-E-D. Hoofhearted. Yes. It is obviously...
Okay, that's intentional.
Okay, yes. 100% intentional that it's supposed to sound like Who Farted.
I love it already.
Their beer is delicious pretty much all the time. Whether they make a dark beer, a hoppy beer, a sour beer. Like, they are... definitely one of my more favored breweries here in Columbus. Well, they're actually out of Marengo, Ohio, which is just northeast of here. But they have a secondary location here in town. And, yeah, very delicious beers, should you be able to get a hold of them. So, yeah, that is my Bell Time beer suggestion from @DeFrango11. He is at Stunt Cali. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.